Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year we make freedom a reality, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And a lot of folks, high anxiety level right now. And that's the way to recenter yourself. Get back in the Word. Make sure that your hope really is in Jesus and not on any of your own efforts. We have so many things that are going on right now. It's easy, I think, to get lost in them and not focus on what we should be focusing on. And I also want to bring up a little bit of a lesson for some people that may have not have heard this on the show before. I always ask the question, who is the government? And everybody says, well, we the people. And that's the right answer. It's funny that if you ask another question first, does everybody want to throw the government out right now and replace everybody in elected office? And most people will say yes. And then you ask, who is the government? Kind of gets the wheels spinning a little bit, because ultimately it's us. It's our responsibility. It's our actions. It's our thoughts. It's our focus that is going to determine whether or not we continue to live in a constitutional republic. And I've heard a lot of Christians say something along the lines of, I don't get involved in politics. But the fact of the matter is that the Founding Fathers had a motto, no king but Jesus. And the whole point behind that was that the temple of the Holy Spirit was the body of the believer, and that was the government of the United States. And the idea was that the Lord would work through each one of us through his Holy Spirit. So to not show up, to not vote, to not be involved in politics is really not making disciples, not loving your neighbor, and not loving the Lord your God with all your mind, heart, body, soul, and spirit, because you're not allowing the Holy Spirit to work through you to touch folks, even in the political realm. And you want to talk about a dark mission field? My goodness. So I hope that that kind of changes the perspective on things. If we really are a government of the people, then it's our duty to do this. And the only reason we have corruption in government, the only reason we have corrupt officials, the only reason we have elected officials that say one thing on the campaign trail and do another when they get into office, is because we are failing in our duty. We're not doing our job. And honestly, it's really a reflection of us as a society. Now, I know many of you out there have done a lot and continue to do a lot to make a God-honoring constitutional republic a reality, and I thank you for that. But I hope that gives you maybe some tools, if you're one of those folks, to share that with your friends, your family, your pastor, your neighbors, because it's going to take all of us with everything that's going on right now. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front. Once again, German bonds went negative. There's some, specific things that are giving us some pretty clear warnings here. And also the United States, the bond market was trending down as well. Interestingly enough, also on the international front, I have confirmed this. There has been a massive deployment of U.S. Navy assets. I'm hearing on the order of 4 carrier groups, ultimately, to the South China Sea. Now, folks, I've got to tell you something. I've mentioned this. It's been a couple years now since this has come up. But when you look in the world where a potential war may break out, you always look at the deployment of U.S. carrier groups. You get 3 carriers in one area, and that essentially is a war footing. You get 4 there, and that's a real strong indicator. Now, the fact they're moving into the South China Sea is alarming many people. So folks need to keep your eyes on that. It is not being reported in the mainstream media outlets. However, I've had it confirmed from several sources that this is indeed happening right now, and that some military assets in Europe have been put on a higher state of readiness. So, folks, keep your eye on this. Something is up, and you know it'll probably be under the guise of a war game or something like that. But the fact that three and maybe four carrier groups are being deployed to the South China Sea is a significant development. Also on the international front, the Brexit Leave campaign still ahead in the polls despite this horrible incident with this MP being murdered. Interesting timing on everything there in a horrible case. But it did deal the Leave campaign a little bit of a blow because people are tying this crazed lunatic with the Leave campaign. And obviously the media is going to do everything they can to take somebody like that and tie it to the Leave campaign to defeat it, to keep the globalist consolidation of power and control in Europe going forward. So, folks, your prayers for those folks over there in Europe right now. I have always been an ardent opponent of the European Union. I think it takes away national sovereignty, and I think it is a footprint for a North American union, and something that we, I don't think, want to be a part of because we're Americans. We're independent. In fact, we're coming up on celebrating that here very shortly. Also on the international front, and very interestingly, I talked about this 2 weeks ago, and then it went kind of quiet, went totally silent in the mainstream news. The Russian government did indeed hack into certain U.S. candidates for president emails and other things. Today, Bloomberg reporting that one of those things was the Clinton Foundation. Now, why would the Russians care about that? Perhaps because they want to leak information to damage Hillary Clinton. I don't know. But the fact remains that Russian hackers don't do these things willy-nilly. They are very intentional about this type of thing. And also, it highlights the fact that the Russian government is hacking on a daily basis. I mean, this is going on. If you talk to really savvy computer programmers and folks in the IT industry, they'll tell you this. I mean, Russian hackers, Chinese hackers as well, sending massive attacks daily against U.S. internet infrastructure. So the fact that this is occurring should also, I think, cue us that, you know, we need to start taking steps to significantly protect our infrastructure, especially our electrical grid, our fiber optic grid, because attacks and intentional attacks have occurred on those here in the past couple of years. Moving on to the national front and talking about Hillary Clinton, actually, the front runner for the Democrats, and she's still not in jail despite two inspectors general saying that there was a violation of the law. The first report coming out on her saying there was a violation of the law. Everybody in America knowing there was a violation of the law. Why is she not in jail? And also, the new book out by a Secret Service agent spelling out in gory detail what had been occurring in the Clinton White House. And my goodness, I mean, what a disgrace to the office. Literally disgracing the office. Unbelievable. If you haven't heard about that book, check it out. It's all over everything right now, and very interesting, a first-person account. Now, I'd heard some of these things before privately, but now it's out in black and white. Unbelievable. And that she is still even in the running is unbelievable. Folks, if for no other reason, we need to come together to stop this. I mean, this is getting to a point where this country, everyone knows it's headed in the wrong direction, could pass a point of no return. We have got to get involved, and we need to do it this year. We just absolutely have to. Also on the national front, ACLU director, and I'm going to keep mentioning this story as well because it's kind of this when liberals meet reality. ACLU director quit after her daughters were accosted in a restroom by a transgender man. Much older than them, apparently, but the fact remains that she did the right thing. She resigned and said, I cannot continue to push this agenda. Because it's just, it can't work. It can't work. And number one, number two, it doesn't make sense. I'm going to tell you, there's an article I'm going to be posting tomorrow by Herb Titus that talks about the fact that Obama's threat to defund schools over the transgender bathroom issue actually violates federal law. And one of the reasons it does is because he went around the Administrative Procedures Act. Now, there's an APA, Administrative Procedures Act, at the state level and also at the federal level. And it is very interesting. Virtually every case I see of these kind of controversial rules, they violate the Administrative Procedures Act, which is intended to allow for public notice, to allow for public comment, to allow for amendment of the proposed rule or policy. You know, and it's just becoming now this literal, just who cares about the law? We're just going to shove this unconstitutional stuff down your throat. So I'm going to continue to mention this because I think it's so important to understand it, that they are violating the law. They're the lawbreakers, and they have been for quite a while. Now a lot of people are starting to wake up to it. Also on the national front, the public land transfer issue, you know, it's a little bit of a red herring, transferring federal lands from the federal government to the states. What we're talking about is these are multi-use lands that the states should already control. Multi-use. These are not public lands, they're not federal lands. These are multi-use lands that the states should already control. And I think that the bigger issue here is cutting the size and scope of bureaucracy. Which brings us to the regional front, where the BLM has now formed this new security and intelligence post. And some people try to argue with me that this is not a new division of the BLM. Yeah, it is. You create the post and the position, that guy is going to get new staff. He's going to get new agents. He's going to get all kinds of new money and equipment. So don't tell me it's just some random new post and try and minimize it. I know how these bureaucracies work. I've seen it for 8 years up close and personal. I know a lot of you have experienced the back end of bureaucracies. And the fact remains, there are good folks that are in bureaucracies. There are. But when you have a bureaucracy beginning to take the form of essentially an army, a militarized branch of that agency, that's effectively skirting posse comitatus, which prevents the army from doing law enforcement functions on U.S. soil. And in fact, there's actually a federal statute that requires law enforcement at the local level to be used to the greatest extent possible when federal agencies are doing an enforcement action. And that's why they put it there, was to prevent that type of massive overreach. And this is the bigger issue. We need to cut the size of these bureaucracies' enforcement arms at the federal level. This is the big problem. And the states can do it. They can help in this by simply not complying, abrogating any agreements they have with federal agencies. And most people don't even know this occurs. We're trying to get a bill passed that would actually shed light on this and allow for these to be publicized. But these agreements literally can be between the Department of Ecology and the Environmental Protection Agency. And there's no legislature involved at all. And it can actually implicate money being spent by taxpayers. So this is the true issue. I think the states need to weigh in on the things that they can and really make sure that these agreements are completely reduced, if not eliminated. Also on the regional front, God and Country Celebration this weekend, 24 through 26, starting on Friday evening up in Marble, Washington. A lot of great folks going to be up there. Legislators from Nevada, Idaho, Washington, all going to be there talking about what's happening in the West and how you can be involved, how to become part of the network of patriots across the Western United States that is growing dramatically right now. And representative, but actually in Nevada parlance, Assemblywoman Michelle Fiore will also now be there. She's confirmed. So, folks, I hope you end up heading up there to Marble, Washington. A great group of patriots and Christians going to be there this weekend. And as always, just a wonderful time of fellowship and opportunity to network. Also on the regional front, July 20th in Missoula, Montana at the federal courthouse. Joe Robertson is going to have his day in court. Many of us are going to be going to Missoula, Montana to show up in support of Joe and to protest once again this EPA double standard, this double standard of federal bureaucracies where they can completely destroy a river in Colorado and yet they want to fine this guy for building a pond he had a permit for. So, folks, if you want to get involved with that, message me on Facebook. I'm going to be posting more about that here next week, July 20th, Missoula, Montana. I think it's going to be about 12 o'clock at the federal courthouse. Also on the regional front, the congressional Democrats investigate so-called extremism. And it's interesting that this inhomelandsecurity.com website tries to put forward this idea that it's a myth. Okay, now here's what it says exactly. Okay. Many on the anti-government side believe, now we're not anti-government, by the way. We love government. We just like government within its proper bounds in the Constitution. Many on the anti-government side believe that county sheriffs are the highest authority in the land, an idea rooted in a racist anti-Semitic ideology that gained traction during the farm crisis in the 1970s. Richard Cohen, president of the Southern Poverty Law Center, told this forum of congressional Democrats. Okay, that's interesting because I pulled up a treatise on the law of sheriffs, coroners, and constables written in 1941, which says that the sheriff, the office of the sheriff, actually is rooted in hundreds of years of Anglo-Saxon common law. I then actually went to a sheriff webpage. And here is what it says, and very interestingly, unabashedly, in the year 871, not 18, 871, Alfred the Great, the sheriff, was responsible for maintaining law and order within his own county. Then later, in 1066, the additional duties of tax collector were added. Then in 1215, in the Magna Carta, the word sheriff is literally mentioned several times in the Magna Carta. So, this and again, as the primary chief law enforcement officer of a county. Now, at that time, it was actually there was a different term called shire, and that's where Shire Reeve comes from. And there's several different interpretations of the original Anglo-Saxon word. But either way, it is not from the 1970s, as the Southern Poverty Law Center would have you believe. Also, on the regional front, kindergartners getting taught gender expression next year. They have confirmed, this is OSPI has confirmed, that that is a local decision by school boards. That means you should weigh in at your school board level and make sure that that does not happen. Also on the regional front, Washington State earns a D-plus on the corruption report. Literally, the Center for Public Integrity has given Washington State poor marks for government accountability. I think it's time for a new governor. On the local front, Spokane Police Department had a 600% increase in civil asset forfeiture money since 2012 to 2013, 1 year, 600% increase. And now there's been allegations that that money has been misappropriated. Folks, we need to end civil asset forfeiture. I think it's unconstitutional. I think it's immoral, actually. And this is one more case, I think, that highlights the need to do that. On Thursday, I will be talking about the Hollick case and some of the new developments there. I do want to touch very briefly on two more things. First, an Act for America chapter is going to be forming in Spokane to combat radical Islam. I will be posting when that meeting date is. They are going to change it, as I understand it. There's going to be some changes to it, so I will post those. But if you want to get involved in combating radical Islam and the influence here in the Spokane area, this ACT chapter will be forming here in the next month, and I would love for anybody interested to contact me so they can get involved. And last but not least, my good friend Steve McLaughlin, candidate for Public Lands Commissioner, is going to be here in Spokane. And, you know, he's, if you don't know about Lands Commissioner, they have a huge role to play, big deal, controlling a vast swath of Washington state, and also how wildfires are managed and actually managing our forests. So if you want to meet Steve, he is going to be here on June 23rd at 5:30 p.m. at La Bella Vie Event Center out in Green Acres, just off Barker Road, 5:30 p.m. on the 23rd. He is also going to be at the Bangkok Thai Restaurant the next morning on June 24th at 7 a.m., 7 a.m. at the Bangkok Thai Restaurant. And he is going to be at the Colville Library that afternoon on June 24th at 3 p.m. And last but not least, in Deer Park that evening at 6 o'clock at Buggin' Out in Deer Park. And if you need any of those repeated, send me a message on Facebook. I'll make sure to get them to you. But La Bella Vie is probably going to be the big event, 5:30 on the 23rd. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everyone that has been praying for Patriot Radio. Really appreciate all of the thoughts and prayers and support. Just it's been overwhelming, and thank you all for that. And remember, if you get a chance, go to Facebook/Patriot Radio US. Just click like on the page and share the page with your friends and family so they can like it as well. And remember, this is a listener-supported show. If you want to contribute, you can go to VoteShea.com and contribute. And that is what keeps us on the air. And thank you to everyone that has been contributing here over the last couple of weeks. I really appreciate it. And God bless you guys for doing that. Well, in the interest of figuring out who to vote for in the upcoming elections, it's my pleasure to introduce Mike Volz, the candidate for 6th District Representative to replace Kevin Parker, and also a CPA and the current deputy treasurer. I mean, your resume is longer than my arm. So, Mike, thanks for joining me on Patriot Radio.
Well, hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Mike, if you could tell the listeners a little bit about your background and your family and why you want to run for the 6th districts now that this vacancy has come out.
Well, first of all, my background, I've been married for, I think we're going on 27 years this August. We have 3 children. My oldest has graduated college. My middle is still in college, and my youngest is in junior high school. They went through public schools, including public universities. You know, we've lived in the area, I would say, probably 35 of my 51 years, and it's my home. And, you know, my background, really, I think that's the best thing that prepares me is I'm a longtime resident of Spokane County with a good part of it in the 6th District. You know, I first moved here in 1973, thereabouts, and we used to climb up on the roof and watch fireworks for Expo 74. So I've been around a long time, and I'm running because I think we can do better in Olympia, representing the region and the 6th District. So I threw my hat in the ring. I'm not, you know, a career politician or you know, worked for politicians my whole life in the political sense. So that's really kind of the basis of my background. I think you mentioned a couple things on education. You know, I am a CPA. I have an MBA from Gonzaga University, and a double major in accounting and finance in from Eastern Washington University. I also have served in the United States Army as a military police officer in the mid-'80s, back when there was a thing called West Germany and the Warsaw Pact. So very broad experience. On the work side, I've first job I ever had was mowing lawns and delivering the Spokane Chronicle on the north side of town. And, you know, not very many people remember the old Spokane Chronicle, but it went under a few decades ago. So I've worked in both public and private sector. I was a controller for a small business. I worked for hospitals. For the Empire Health Services in Spokane. I worked in the treasurer's office in two different stints. My current position is chief deputy treasurer. I also worked at STA for 4 years. And I think that about covers it at a bullet point level without getting into too much detail.
Like I said, your resume is as long as my arm. And by the way, I just want to say this. You're a big guy, and I think you'd be kind of intimidating as a military police officer. Just saying, you know, laying that out there. I mean, I remember my time in the military, and I think you would have been pretty intimidating.
Well, yeah, I'm about 6'7" now. I think I was 6'8" when I got out of the Army, and probably would be about 5'8" when they 5'8" when they put me in the grave because I, you know, keep shrinking, but you know, I got a few inches to give anyway.
A lot more inches than I do anyway. So, well, hey, I want to ask you real quick about your family. You're married, you've got kids. If you could tell a little bit briefly about that as well.
Yeah, I met my wife in 1980 when we were 15 years old, and we were married a few years later, you know, 9 years later or something like that. You know, and have been married and worked very hard to build our family. My it's a very long term solid relationship. I think we've known each other 36 years and been married going on 27. You know, we raise our children on the north side of Spokane, and my son graduated from WSU. As did my wife. My son just graduated in December, and summa cum laude in microbiology, in 3.5 years while working two jobs. So very proud of him. My middle daughter is transferred from WSU to Eastern to go into the occupational therapy program, and my youngest is attending Northwood, our middle school, in the Meade School District. So, you know, we're a very close family, you know, faith-based family, and it's the number one important thing. And actually, those were the first four endorsements that I needed to make the decision to run. And once I had that peace of mind through prayer and reflection and my family's endorsement, that's all I needed to throw my hat in the ring, and the rest will come.
Yeah, I think that is the most important thing to have, is that family backing when you do this, because it really is the family running for office. It's not just you, you know, it really is. Well, I want to get into some issues. First, I want to talk about something that has been on the minds of everyone, and that is the idea of the Constitution meaning what it says. Where are you at on the Constitution and the idea of a living Constitution?
Well, first of all, I took enough to protect and defend the Constitution when I joined the Army, and that oath was never rescinded. It's inviolate. It's sacrosanct, and it means something to me. In terms of the Constitution, it says what it says, and it's written for a reason. And if you look back on the history, and I'm not nearly as well versed as you are on the issue, but I do know enough when you look at the Constitution in conjunction with the Declaration of Independence and the Federalist Papers and other documents. It's not meant to be a living document in any way, shape, or form. It is a contract that limits a government and maximizes individual rights and responsibilities. And when you start stripping that away and taking away people's rights and taking away their responsibilities, you undermine the fabric of our society. And when you look back historically, you go back to 1776, you know, Germany was a collection of vassal states, if you will, you know, independent different kingdoms. England was a monarchy. France was a monarchy. Japan was a shogunate. It was the shoguns, then the emperor ran the show in Japan. And ours has really been the only form of government that has existed for over 200 years in basically the same form. Although over the last, half a century or so, we've seen that very, very strong efforts to undermine that that document and the durability of our country. And to me, it's troubling.
Well, I think it is, because the Constitution is what unites us. So if we don't agree that it means what it says, then we really, I think, create division just on that point alone.
Correct. And if you can't agree on basically a construct of government and some rules of the road, then the rest is somewhat inconsequential. And the Constitution does provide for a lot of latitude, giving states tremendous amount of power. So if as long as the states don't violate the essence of the Constitution, they should have a lot of freedom in developing their own structure of government within the states. But when you mandate this kind of uniform approach across all of the states and all the citizens, that's very, very troubling and problematic. And it was never meant to be that way.
No, it was not meant to be that way. And I think that's why there's a lot of differing opinions on things now. And I think a lot of unnecessary division. You sit down and talk to people and you work through things. And most oftentimes we agree on much more than we disagree on. And I think that has been used really as a wedge in the American people and people in Washington as well. So appreciate that. I want to move on next to the life issue. Huge deal in Washington State. Legalized abortion before Roe versus Wade. Been a huge push here in recent years to defund abortion in Washington, not women's health services, but abortion specifically in Washington State. We came within two votes of doing that last year. Where do you stand on the life issue?
Well, first of all, I just received notification a couple nights ago that I was endorsed by the Human Life PAC for my position on being strongly pro-life. Defunding abortion at the state level, I think, is appropriate if we look at all of these other aspects that the government doesn't pay for, not to pay for. That's clearly one of them, that they should not pay for that. Now, we will never defund abortion per se, because there's a lot of private contributors to the abortion issue, and that's, I suppose, within their rights and their conscience. But no, I do not agree with state or federal funded abortions.
And we're going to have this vote coming up. How would you vote on an amendment to the budget to defund abortion in Washington State?
I would vote yes to defund abortion in Washington State.
So, I think a lot of people, appreciate those very direct answers. I think there are a lot of people out there that don't give those direct answers. And I, thank you for that, Mike. I appreciate it. And I think that's one of the reasons that you're gaining so much traction among the grassroots and also so much support. This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, with my special guest, Mike Volz, candidate for 6th District, CPA, deputy treasurer, Army veteran, and a resume longer than my arm, literally. So, Mike, let's move on to a different issue, and this issue is the issue of liberty, and there's two parts of this. The first is, recently there has been a lot of argument about the idea of conscience. We have Article 1, Section 11 in the state constitution says there's an absolute freedom of conscience in all matters of religious sentiment. Article 26 says that there should be perfect toleration of religious sentiment. And yet we've got the case down in Tri-Cities where you have a private business owner being sued by the attorney general for not wanting to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony. Then you also have the whole issue of transgender bathrooms and the idea of conscience for our daughters in our schools. Where are you at with the conscience issue, and where do you see this going on both those separate parts of it?
Okay. First of all, on whether you choose to participate or not in a in a same-sex wedding is clearly a matter of conscience. You should not be compelled to do that. Just in the same regard that we should not force somebody to attend a church of our liking. They have a conscience provision in the Constitution, and actually, rather common sense, but, as the saying goes, common sense isn't so common sometimes. And then people should not be forced to do that. And I believe that's a kind of segue into, right now it's wedding planners and bakeries that are being forced into participating, and the next one's going to be churches. And so I think those provisions are there for a reason. They need to be enforced, and not liberally so. They need to be ruled in favor of the individual and not some idea of a broader right or responsibility. In regards to the same-sex bathroom, I was asked that question by a woman at an event, and I said my answer is I have a wife, two daughters, and a concealed weapons permit. So I will, if need be, stand guard, but that to me is ridiculous that's allowed to happen. I mean, it creates such an environment, a risky environment, that all sorts of pedophiles and rapists are gaining easier access to the bathroom. It used to be a red flag if you saw a man going into the bathroom, and that used to be enough to warrant a call to the police. And not anymore. Now people have to give pause and think, about the new law and the new interpretation and application of that.
Well, and I think that's, it's this inconsistency that there can be a right of conscientious objection when it comes to something as serious as military service and going to war. And it's totally recognized, the right not to participate in an activity based on sincerely held religious beliefs, very long-standing Anglo-Saxon common law in the United States as well. And yet we're still having this argument about whether or not to participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony or whether or not to share a bathroom with somebody that is not of your same sex. I mean, that seems, it seems kind of interesting to me. We're still having that argument, but I think it's a good discussion that we need to have. I want to also shift to another issue of liberty, and that is the issue of surveillance and the use of drones in particular. It was almost passed unanimously out of the House to ban the use of these so-called dirt boxes, stingray devices that literally are on the bottom of a plane and pick up cell phone signals, went out, I think, unanimously. What is your stance on those issues, and especially the issue of drone use for regulatory enforcement?
Absolutely opposed to it, because that's they can cite a good reason to get it started, and then it'll turn into more and more. And it's if you look back in history, the fascist regimes and the dictatorships would love to have had that technology available. And so I think we need to safeguard the right to privacy, even if it means, the regulators have to actually go out and do their job and walk a property or whatever without intruding on property rights. But just merely flying over is such an egregious violation of individual right to privacy that, it should not even be a discussion. But the point is, that's one of those issues, really, that it is not a right or a left issue. It is a common sense issue, and a lot of people are rallying around that. And we need to, figure out a way to get that done and enact it, so we're not doing flyovers, and spying on people, because all it'll do is grow and grow and grow. So stop it now before it becomes too late to stop it.
Yeah, we have to, which brings us into the issue of property rights. One of the biggest things that shocked me in Olympia was when the governor looked me right in the eyes 2 feet away and said, "We want to use drones to map all of the properties on the coast of Washington." And then the implication from his aides was that they wanted to do the same with all the ranches and farms inland. So that brings up the issue of property rights. Where are you at on that? What do you think the priorities are as well on the issue of property rights?
Well, Well, more and more, you know, government seems to think they own everything. And if you just look at the, you know, public lands and how much of that's being locked up and we're not allowed to use it, is it really public lands? Not anymore if it's government lands and we can't have access to it. So there's that aspect of it. And then the other aspect, you know, I believe if somebody owns some property, and yes, we all acknowledge that we need some, you know, zoning requirements and some regulations so we don't have a smelter plant built in the middle of a residential neighborhood. Nobody wants that, of course. But the idea is that government right to individual property is preeminent is rather objectionable, and completely disagree with that. I think you own it, you built it, it's yours. You should be able to have the peaceful enjoyment of your own property, and the government needs really need to be secondary. And in the idea of eminent domain that's being more and more liberally used to take property really at a discounted price was never the intent of eminent domain in taking property from people for any reason, whether there's a perceived public good, which is really getting stretched in the law, but, you know, a resort generates tax revenue, therefore it's in the public good to take individual property. So I'm a very strong advocate of personal property rights. Again, it's the foundation of our country and the foundation of what has made us great is that anybody can get their, you know, their plot of land and do with it what they want as long as it's not, you know, intrusive or impeding upon their neighbors. And then this idea that, you know, somehow I'm going back a few years, but the spotted owls and the newts and the frogs and the butterflies have more right to property than the actual owner is very, very troubling, and it has an ulterior motive. And it's not to save, you know, wildlife and trees and plants. It's to subordinate citizens to an all-powerful government through the seizure of property.
Well, and I think that's where the argument needs to lie, because we've seen some really kind of egregious regulations that if they were applied to government would actually shut down the agency, but they are not. You know, for example, I mentioned in the monologue about the EPA ruining an entire river in Colorado. Everybody obviously is outraged at that, but no one was held accountable. And yet you've got a man in Montana who has a pond that he literally had a local permit for to build, and yet the EPA comes in to try to shut him down. And by the way, his pond is not polluted. It's not. And he has a dog, and he likes to throw his stick out in the water and watch his dog swim. That seems kind of American to me. I mean, how do you see this being stopped, or how do you see there being some solutions to pushing back on some of this?
Well, I think one of the things that need to happen is this idea of federal lands need to be done away with. We need to turn over, I would say, the bulk of federal lands, at least to the states would be a good start, and let the states manage it. Because I think, by and large, from what I've read on it, the states do a much better job of managing states' lands than the feds do for managing federal land. And, you know, and that involves, you know, responsible and reasonable logging, hunting, and letting people use the lands. So I think that's a good start, and that needs to be strengthened in state law so that those individual rights are restricted. You know, one of the big themes in government, whether we're talking about the EPA, whether we're talking about environmental, whether we're talking about business, is we have a legion of regulators, you know, federal and state and local regulators who write regulations so they can go out and regulate more. And I think that's part of the problem, because eventually they will regulate all of us off our lands. They'll regulate all the businesses out of Washington. You know, we need to stop that. And so I think, A, turn over the federal lands to the states, and B, enforce, strengthen individual property rights in state law and respect that.
I think you're absolutely right. And this isn't, you know, I there's some people out there that think that is somehow somehow a bad thing, and yet state lands are managed much better than federal lands, and private lands are managed much better than either one of those two. And I asked this question in the Environment Committee, how many tons of CO2 were released as a result of the wildfires last year? And they said about 24 to 25 million tons of CO2 were released last year. I said, how many total tons of CO2 are released every year by Washington State? And they said 92 million. Wow, that's a huge, that's a huge percentage of what was released in Washington State. So then I asked the question, what is the governor's plan to reduce carbon emissions? And they said 18 million over 18 years, a million a year. Whereas actually transferring the control and management over to people that are going to actually manage it would reduce that number of CO2 emissions probably down to the 5 million tons range if our forests were properly managed or lower. That would be the greatest single thing that we could do actually for our environment. And I don't understand how people don't get that. What is your take on that?
I agree. I mean, you look at carbon emissions and all that. A good volcano, I can't remember how many decades or century worth of greenhouse gases a good volcano will release into the atmosphere. Fires are the same way. And if you don't manage forests responsibly, you're gonna incur that over and over again. And I love the national forests, the parks that we go to. I think they're great. I just wish that they were better managed. And I think the way to better manage is let the states manage that, and where appropriate, either through lease or sale agreements, you start turning it back over to private citizens. But there has to be a balance in how much of that land is available for public use, with responsible management and oversight and control, which logging and clearing out brush and all that other stuff, but just letting a forest grow till it burns is not at all responsible.
Well, I want to shift gears and move on to a couple of real quick issues. One of the things that we've been working on is being tough on crime, in the Republican caucus specifically. There's a lot of issues out there about being tough on crime. Seems like crime is increasing. What is your take on how we can be more tough on crime?
Well, being tough on crime is a tough question, because a lot of what's happening now, in addition to the repeat offenders, is there's a lot of mental health issues and drug issues that lead to the crime. So how can we intervene in the process, for treatment of mental health and the drug issues prior to the criminal activity? And that's a challenging issue because of, there's a myriad of court rulings going back, I think, to the 80s, maybe even earlier, that you can't, forcibly detain people because of mental illness. So that's part of it. And I know that the courts and the prosecutor's office and the sheriff's office are getting choked with these mental health issues. So how do we get those people who are struggling the appropriate help before they escalate to a point where somebody gets harmed and then it becomes beyond a mental health issue or a treatment issue? So I think that's one facet of it. And then, we see, repeat offenders. And years ago, we had the, three strikes, you're outlaw, which seems to be kind of ignored at this point. So that needs to be strengthened. We need tougher sentencing for legitimate, the criminal activities, with the hope of being able to intervene prior to the crimes and identify and help people with the mental health issues. The courts and the jail and the sheriff's office and the prisons were not meant to be, a mental institute for treatment, and they're not. And so I think there's kind of a balancing act that we need to come up with to help ensure that we do the best we can for our fellow citizens that are struggling, but yet punish those that cross the line clearly and with stronger sentencing. you know, and higher conviction rates and more funding in the courts, maybe to get those convictions through with, I think, more stringent guidelines on an authority of the judges to sentence people.
I completely agree with you, and particularly in respect to, you know, something that we've been working on, and that is electronic home monitoring and the lack of accountability that was there and some of the reforms that we were able to get through, the best reforms in about 20 years. I think it just is what the citizens expect, and a lot of times they don't even know this stuff is going on. I want to shift to elections very quickly. A lot of talk about securing elections in Washington State. What is your take on that issue? What do you think some of the solutions are?
Well, I don't know if very many people remember, but I ran for county auditor in 2006 because I did not agree with the vote by mail. But that was when it was first coming out and was implemented into Spokane County. I felt strongly about it, strong enough to run for office really on that issue alone. But that wasn't probably the best way to go. We could look at, you know, mail-in ballots. A lot of federal reports show that it is the most prone to fraud. So we need to be able to, you know, sync up and ensure that people are who they say they are when they vote. And it's very hard to do when you just mail out ballots. There's a part of the Washington State Constitution that says the legislature must guarantee absolute secrecy in the preparation and delivery of the ballots, and I'm not sure how that's fulfilled with vote by mail. But that being said, I put that forward as my cause and lost, and it was approved by a voter referendum, if you will. So that's a struggle on how do we balance that out. But definitely more needs to be done to ensure that people are who they are when they who they say they are when they vote. You know, the best way to do that is a picture ID at a polling place. So short of that, I'm not sure exactly what solutions are out there on with the current system on voting.
So I want to talk about the next thing, and you've done a terrific job of uniting factions in the Republican Party. You really are seen as a unifier, and one of the places that you really are unifying people is on the budget and taxes. You have all the experience regarding budget and taxes that anybody could possibly hope for, and if we end up being in the majority next year, you would be helping to write a budget. How do you see the budget? How should it be written, and what is your approach on taxes in the last couple minutes that we have here?
Well, first of all, if you look at the tax structure in Washington State, it flat out drives away business. And Spokane County is in a unique place situation because we're not insulated in the Puget Sound or a large metropolitan county, and we're right next to Idaho. And all you have to do is drive east on I-90 until you hit the border, look up, and the first thing you see is Cabela's. And Cabela's was supposed to go into Spokane County, but chose Idaho because of the tax laws. So if you want to raise governmental revenues, lower taxes, and lower taxes on getting job providers into Spokane County. If we do that, we raise the tax base, we can increase revenue if more people are working, less people are dependent on government. So it's a double win. You get people to work, you give them opportunities for growth, for jobs, and prosperity. And so that's the number one thing we can do. In terms of the budget side, the first thing we need to look at is, okay, folks, what's the priority of what government ought to be doing at the state level? And let's vet those. And I know the McCleary decision is looming out there, which we probably could have an hour on that. But if education is the priority, then what do we give up that's not a priority so we can address education or infrastructure or these other essential services? So it's a matter of ranking and prioritizing what government ought to be doing and then focus on those. Trying to lower the tax rates to increase tax revenue and increase employment and increase opportunities. And honestly, more revenue goes a long ways in fixing schools and fixing roads and fixing a lot of these problems that we have in Washington State, you know, education. So, you know, a lot of issues can be fixed if people are working and people are prosperous. And honestly, if there's competition in the labor force for good jobs, wages will go up. You don't need to mandate a minimum wage if people are in a competitive environment, and business owners will have to pay more because more people are working.
Mike Voltz, candidate for 6th District State Representative, an Army veteran, Deputy Treasurer, CPA, and running to fill the vacant seat in the 6th Legislative District. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. I really appreciate you, and I look forward to having you on again sometime after August before the general election. And God bless you, Godspeed, in the last 30 seconds, any final words you want to say to the young people out there that might want to get involved in politics? And also, how people can get a hold of you?
Oh, yeah, you can get a hold of me. It's MikeVoltz.com. V as in Victor, O-L-Z is probably the best way. You can shoot me an email. There's a little tab there. But you can shoot me an email, and we will respond to you. Young people, if you want to get involved, we are looking for volunteers. We've got a growing number of volunteers that are helping out on the campaign. We're running this very hard and very effective based on a lot of support from a lot of different people, you know, throughout the community, young, old, middle-aged, all are welcome. So if you want to get involved, shoot me an email.
All right, Mike Voltz, God bless. And again, we'll have you on again probably sometime after August. Take care.
All right. Thank you, sir.
This is Matt Shea once again on Patriot Radio. Thank you to everybody listening. And you heard, see, I like candidates like this who are going to be just straight up on the issues, no mealy-mouthing, this is where I stand. And also willing to listen to people, too. And somebody with that kind of a resume that could help write a budget, my goodness. Well, this is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening today. If you get a chance, visit Patriot Radio on Facebook. But remember, do everything you can to defend freedom locally. May God bless all of you. May he make this generation the greatest one.